Hi, ladies and gents, and welcome to tonight's Trinity Tims. I think we're all in a good mood tonight, and as usual, I am joined by my colleagues Eric Knott from Reed Celtic, Joe McGeer from Video Celts. My name is James Forrest from the Celtic blog. And listen, before I start the night, I'm going to go on a wee minor digression, right? So forgive me for this, right? I don't normally talk about non-football subjects on here, right? I'm going to wee dig at Sports Interactive for the absolutely shambolic and shoddy way they're releasing their flagship game tomorrow. It's an utter disgrace. You've had a year to release a finished product and you still haven't managed it. You're taking the piss out of your customers now. And I've just refunded your game, so I won't be the only person that does. That doesn't mean I won't believe in a scathing Steam review anyway. But from there, we shall proceed. Yesterday was interesting, wasn't it? The last week has actually been interesting. When we sat here last week, we were talking about the Hearts game. And I think we all felt pretty despondent. I mean, I know that when it came to yesterday's game, I was not looking forward to it one bit. I thought it was going to be an absolute nightmare of a day. I didn't think we would lose, but I wasn't looking forward to it. And I couldn't see clearly the mechanism by which we were going to win. We weren't creating a lot of chances. We didn't look very good up front. I thought that the whole style of play was going to suit them better than it was going to suit us. And I worried that they might have... It sounds silly now to say it, but I worried they might have more firepower than us. And it all turned out to be groundless because the last week has been nuts. And I know we've all covered some crazy events on here, but I think the last week is probably up there with the best of them. And I know we did a podcast, an emergency podcast on Rodgers, but could not possibly have foreseen the performances in the last two games and the lift that O'Neill's return has given all of us. So before we even talk about them, Maura, Joe, what are your thoughts on the last 7 days? I mean, my God.
James, you're losing it. He says, what's your thoughts on tomorrow? Nothing in particular. Tuesday, it's a Champions League night. Still missing out on that. But even with our newfound squad, we're better off out of the Champions League than in it. But it's been quite a turnaround at Celtic in the last 7 days. There's a lot of people jumping on top of Brendan Rodgers and slapping him about and things. But football... more than a few people says it. It's about fine margins, and there were similarities yesterday with the Scottish Cup final. It was a game we should have put to bed. We lost a late equaliser. With a young, inexperienced striker. I mean, who was confident when Johnny Kenny came off that when Callum Osmond went on that we were going to do it? So. It's fine margins, and I'll take fine margins every day of the week because that's what football, that's what sport's about. It's not played in paper, it's not done elsewhere, it's what happens on the day. And Callum McGregor belted one past Super Jack Butland, and then Callum Osmond had the confidence to anticipate where Kieran Tierney was putting the ball, put it in the back of the net. His first goal for Celtic, his first senior goal, and happy days. But it's been very, very interesting at Celtic. There's been plenty of bloodletting. There's been more nonsense in the last week than you'd get. If you are genuinely one of the most admired and best-run clubs in Europe, then the things that happened in the last week wouldn't happen over a five-year period. But it's been a bit bonkers. But bottom line is, the team is back in a little bit of form. The manager has given them some energy. They're changing things a little bit. The hostility to Brendan Rodgers that was around the club, that was very obvious around the club, that's been removed. enjoy it just now. The January transfer window still needs tons to be done. There's loads of questions to be answered at the club. Meet Midtjylland on Thursday doesn't particularly matter. Getting a win against Kilmarnock on Sunday is far more important. They're in the back of four successive defeats. Let's do that in a bit of style. And then there's the international break, which should be full of intrigue. But I suspect Celtic will take their favourite way out of things. They'll take the lazy option. Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney will continue their odd couple double act. O'Neill takes all the media and things, but as we saw at Hampden, Sean Maloney's got a very distinct role. For extra time, Sean Maloney was deeply involved. Sean Maloney was in the huddle. Sean Maloney was taking everything. Then there's a few pet words from Martin O'Neill at the end of it. So that might be the combination that works. Again, there's no science to this. It can be freaky. And it might be that's the partnership to keep going with. I don't see a big hitter manager appearing on the horizon. And if Celtic can get away with it, they'll keep going with this management team. And they proved yesterday, and they proved against Falkirk, that Celtic have the calibre of players, the squad to get by in Scotland. I'll keep going for it. Give me more and more. Sunday was torture. Sunday was horrific. The second half felt my life was ebbing away. Just, here we go, here we go. It was similar to the Aberdeen final from May. But thankfully, the good guys prevailed. It was all right in the night. So I'll take it and just sit back and see what madness transpires over the next couple of days.
I hope you know you're going to go over that whole O'Neill bit again later on. Because we're going to talk about that at great length, I think. Because there's a lot to unpack in terms of the managerial situation. But Eric, last week, and thoughts on yesterday. Yesterday, not tomorrow.
Look, what a difference a week makes. Yeah. I mean, we were all in a state of shock a couple of hours from now, this time a week ago, when those statements came through, and we were kind of, as you can hear, I'm pretty hoarse after yesterday because I let rip. I really did let rip. But look, I can't help but be enthusiastic and jump on the Martin O'Neill bandwagon. I was a bit skeptical at the start, but at the moment I'm actually, you know, I'm loving the enthusiasm. I'm loving the atmosphere around. It seems that everybody's got a pep in their step again. I know yesterday was tough in the second half and the Ibrox side got back into the game and, you know, they showed a bit of fight even down to 10 men. But I always felt, I don't think I was ever worried at any stage throughout the game. Even when they scored the penalty, which I was farcical if you ask me anyway, that there was no way that was a penalty. But even when they scored the penalty, I wasn't worried that we wouldn't, you know, I was still confident that we would do the business, even if it went to extra time. I just knew they couldn't keep up that level of intensity with 10 men. And it would just be a matter of, it'd be a war of attrition in extra time. And that's how it transpired, really. You could see they were tiring. And we were, when Callum started playing in that more forward role, it was like shades of the old Callum. And he scored the kind of goal that he scores, you know, when he plays in that kind of forward role as well. But the one thing I would say about Callum Osmond, I saw him come on in the Falkirk game on Wednesday night, and first thing that kind of stood out to me was, similar to Johnny Kenny, his movement is very good. He gets himself into prime positions for scoring. He seems to have an instinct to be in the right place at the right time. And yesterday's goal that he scored, that was a poacher's goal. That was a striker's goal. You know, he was in the right place at the right time. So his positional sense seems to be really good. And I wrote an article today, and I kind of put the question in. I wonder what Brendan Rodgers was thinking if he watched yesterday's game. You know, hindsight is a foresight, as they say. And I thought maybe that, you know, Rodgers might have looked at that and said, well, shit, maybe I should have used Callum Osmond at some point, you know, considering the state that we were in. But also the transformation of Johnny Kenny in the space of just two games. You know, he got a brace on Wednesday night against Falkirk, and then he goes out and he gets a really, really strong, powerful header yesterday, you know, and rose above all of the defenders and rose highest to score a great goal to get us in the lead. So whatever Martin O'Neill has done or whatever he's injected into the squad has definitely worked. However long the magic dust lasts is the question. But unlike you, Jens, I wasn't frightened or scared going into the game yesterday, because for some reason I just took a lot of confidence out of the way that we played on Wednesday night, and I felt that the shackles were off. Martin O'Neill was allowing the players, and Sean Maloney, I suppose, as well. Like, he was allowing the players to play with freedom. He was allowing them to attack. Gone was the side-to-side passing and the pass backs. And for a change, we were just passing the ball forward. It was direct forward attacking football. And that was, it wasn't a massive change, you know. So, like, realistically, he didn't make huge changes. He just allowed them to become a bit more, he gave them a bit more freedom to attack and not to be so conservative like Brendan Rodgers normally played it. And I know a lot of people are like saying, like, oh, it's great to see Rodgers gone. It's great to see us playing this year. It's great to see us playing that way. And I kind of said, you know, everybody had a smile on their face yesterday. And I kind of said today in my article today, I said, just remember all the smiles that were on your face when he landed 11 trophies. You know, and you can't just discount that. And you can't just wipe that out in the space of two games. And you can't forget that. And you also can't forget the way he was treated by Dermot Desmond. That can't be forgotten. And that's what the board members are going to hope. They're going to hope that this will paper over the cracks, that we're all going to be on a high and we're all going to be delighted. And this campaign from the Celtic, you know, the fans collective, this momentum can't stop. It has to keep going forward. It has to keep going forward. But I will jump on the Martin O'Neill bandwagon and I'll enjoy it for as long as it goes on for. And it's hard to know. Joe could be right. They could just take the easy option here and go with this till the end of the season. And then we'll get the old, you know, oh, these guys did great, so we're going to keep them on. You just don't know what our board will do. You just do not know. But I think Martin O'Neill deserves to lead the team out, you know, for the League Cup final at least. I would like to see that happen. And I'd like to see him. It's like you said, James, so many times about Neil Lennon and his, you know, where he could have just walked off into the sun. Is it like Sin Canatus? Is that the guy you quoted? Yeah, you know, that he could have just done that. And he could have been gone down as a legend. I would expect that Martin O'Neill will be sensible enough to do that. That he'll do something really good in the short time that he's there. Whether that just be the winning of the League Cup, and he just lands another trophy, and all it does, and he walks away into the sunset, and he maintains and enhances his legendary status with the club, because I think he's more sensible, and he will do something like that. You can see even in his body language when he was talking yesterday, like he did intimate that he feels that there should be some sort of movement on trying to get a manager in the international window, the two-week window. So, I mean, I don't think he'd have said that if he didn't feel that something like that was going to happen. But, again, as I said, with our board, it's hard to know. But, yeah, yesterday, I really enjoyed yesterday. And as I said to you, James, it was my dad passed away yesterday, 2 years ago, and I felt that he was there in spirit yesterday. You know, it was his anniversary yesterday, and I just went into the game believing that, you know, he'd play his part and help us win, and he did. You know, so and I was really happy, and I over celebrated. I drank a hell of a lot of pints. I fell asleep on the couch last night, and I was in bed by 9 o'clock. I was so steamed. So I haven't got much memory when I got home. But that's the way to do it, I think, in a game like that. It was just, you also have to bear in mind that we've been waiting since December of last year to get a win over these guys. You know, we hadn't won in normal time in a game against them since September 24. So, you know, it was really nice, and it was sweet to get the victory the way we did. And I have to say, I'll tell you one thing. I was delighted for Callum Osmond. I was delighted. I looked at his interview this morning afterwards, you know, and I kind of went over all the interviews with the players, and I was looking at his post-match interview, and the way he just said, that's what Celtic is about. It's about making players and fans' dreams come true. And yesterday, a dream came true for Callum Osmond. He said that was the best day of his life. And Celtic does that for people, and that's what I love about Celtic. And for a while, Martin O'Neill has given us a reprieve, and it's given us a break from all the shit that's been going on at the club. And it was just nice to see something like that yesterday and see Callum Osmond, you know, say that that's the best day of my life. You know, I like, that's what Celtic's about. That encapsulates Celtic, you know, and that's what I really enjoyed about it.
Yeah, I think a lot of us enjoyed that aspect here. But, I mean, you guys have both mentioned Martin, so we may as well discuss the managerial situation first. Joe, you've expressed a concern that the board will take the lazy way out. I could not agree more with you. I think that's a very real concern at this moment in time. They're trading as they always do, as they always will, whenever they can get away with it, on emotion rather than reason. I don't quite think some people have grasped where we are right now. We need a massive January transfer window. It needs to get everything right. It has to lay the foundations for the summer. And in order for that process even to start, we should have a new manager in the building by the time it comes around. And that new manager should have sufficient time to get his ideas across and get his act together. And even if we appoint one in the international break, it's not a lot of time to assess the squad and decide what he needs. Certainly isn't a lot of time to assess what he will need for the start of next season and Champions League qualifiers, which will be creeping up on us and hitting us over the head before we know it. And I just think that the longer they drag this out, the more likely it is that this is the permanent managerial team. And I have to admit, there is a part of me that gets the whole nostalgia element of it. But if I'm being genuine and I'm being honest, I can't even stomach the idea of it. I genuinely can't stomach the idea of it. A board of directors that once again just doesn't want to do a fucking job. At the end of the day, it's their responsibility to go out and get us the best possible candidate that they can and put us in the best possible position for next season. And if this is what they settle for, then it's a scandal and an outrage, and it increases my conviction that there's not a single one of them who should be allowed to stay in the building. Eric, I hope that you're right, because think of the great... Think of what O'Neill could accomplish here. It takes you up when we're at probably the lowest ebb that Lawyers have been at in a long, long time. Not only does he get his to a cup final and hopefully wins it, but Hearts have got to come to Celtic Park the week before the cup final. And if he gets us back in the title race, it even puts us in front in the title race. That's it. That's job done. That's everything you came back. That's exceeded the expectations of every single one of us. And you can go on that note with great credit and the greatest honour, and you'll be one of the most revered figures in modern Celtic history. You are already, but that would just be the cherry on the cake. You don't need to stay and win a treble. You don't need to stay and win another treble. That's the moment right there. That's, as you say, Cincinnati's. Brought in a deal in emergency, dealt with it, went back to his farm. Simple as that. That's why his name is revered throughout history. And that's how O'Neill sees it. If you listen to him talk about it, that's how he sees it. I have a sneaking suspicion he will get to the final. And right now I'm minded to wait him, and I think that it would be an excellent capstone to his incredible career as a manager. To give him one shot at Hampden, to walk out in front of the Celtic fans and walk a trophy around the ground, it would be a fantastic end to his career as a manager. And I think the club should do that and will do that, especially if rumours are that our managerial candidate's not available in December. I don't know how accurate any of that is. But O'Neill probably deserves that. And then when it's done, once he's dragged his kicking and screaming back at the title race and won his own domestic trophy, he can go, and he will go with everyone's thanks, everyone's gratitude, and the most credit anybody's had walking out the door at Celtic Park in many, many, many years. What about yourself, Joel? Do you think there is a plan? Or do you think they're just going to basically take the piss and say, this is enough? No, the managerial search has led again to a name in Dermot Desmond's wee black book.
You said, is there a plan? Of course there's not. And you're talking about they this and they that, they the next thing. It's Dermot Desmond. The big decisions at Celtic are all down to Dermot Desmond. Paul Tisdale, Michael Nicholson, Peter Lyle could all come up with some incredible name. And if it doesn't ring a bell with Dermot Desmond, it doesn't advance. So in February 2019, Neil Lennon was convenient. We had to have someone to come in for final 3 months of the season. And then they got lazy. The former chief executive says they'd had a cabinet full of applications and he never even bothered looking at them because there's a guy in the building that knew the city. And I think most of us thought that they'd be trying something with Sean Maloney, and they've got Maloney in as manager and Martin O'Neill looking after things. Maloney's going to be on the training ground. Maloney's going to be in the dressing room beforehand. I think Sean Maloney's a good coach. I know from youth team players when he came back to Celtic in 2017, the young players thought it was fantastic. And then when he left and Tommy McIntyre resumed, it wasn't quite as exciting. So Maloney's got great skills, but he's also got great problems. He's not got the personality to be a manager. He's not got the authority to go in and boss things about and have the impact and influence that Martin O'Neill, Brendan Rodgers, Ange Postecoglou has. So there could be a role for Maloney, but the Celtic board, I'll rewind that. It's not the Celtic board. Dermot Desmond will just look at it, and if it's going all right, why change it? Whoever's coming in January, if a manager's to be appointed, the notion that this guy coming in January would then be nominating his transfer targets, that's not happening. Celtic already have their transfer targets. Michael Nicholson's biggest target in January will be to produce another transfer surplus. Selling Maeda will be the biggest deal that he can do in January. So that sort of setup isn't going to attract the sort of manager that Celtic require. If Celtic can't attract the sort of manager that's required, then they'll just stick with what they've got. They winged it with Lennon as a caretaker. They winged it with John Kennedy as a caretaker in 2021. Eddie Howe was never, ever coming to Celtic, but it was good. It was a good story to put out there. It was a good deflector. And Martin O'Neill keep things going. With Sean Maloney working 24-7, I don't see a manager coming in. Unless there's a... You've mentioned it a few times before, James. Unless there's an Ange Postecoglou type waiting out there, which is highly unlikely, that's prepared to come in with the setup Celtic have and go on with it, then they're just going to have to go with Maloney and O'Neill, or O'Neill and Maloney. And if it goes as we hope it goes successfully, then that'll be vindication. And then it can be Sean Maloney and maybe some other senior figure. Hopefully not the Dunfermline manager, but I can see Sean Maloney being heavily involved going into next season. I think that's far more likely than the Bruges manager, Kieran McKenna, or any other sort of big hitters. And you can tell by the messengers that put out the stories about McKenna and the Bruges manager. It's good, feel-good stories. Celtic are big hitters. Here's big names. They could be the next Celtic manager. Unlikely to be happening. So hopefully Maloney adapts quickly and gets on with it more and more. But Maloney, O'Neill Maloney seems far more likely than big hitter coming in. Glass half empty.
Yeah, I personally think that this managerial hunt is going to be the final referendum on this board. And I have a feeling that they will be tempted to go with a sentimental approach and try and tug in the heartstrings by bringing Mike Martin and putting Maloney in there as his assistant and getting them to the end of the season, possibly at the end of next season, and try to kick the can as far down the road as possible. Because if these people have to make an actual decision, if they actually have to go and find a manager, I think we're probably going to get something that a lot of people are not going to like. And that is the thing. The last thing these guys want to do is have to do any real work. And they haven't done any real work in appointing Maloney and O'Neill. And these are guys who are available, are guys that Desmond knows. And Desmond simply phoned up O'Neill and said, can you step in for a wee while? Or with the caveat that maybe a wee while is a bit longer than the few weeks that Martin initially seemed to think. I have a bad feeling that we're looking at another Lennon type situation here. Another, let's just try and get through the season, and at the end of it, we can find a way to justify this. And ironic as it sounds, and they count on this as well, the more successful we are, the more they'll feel like they can get away with it. But they haven't taken any kind of decision here. And I've said this in my articles today, they don't get any credit for this weekend. They don't get any credit for what's happened in the past 5 or 6 days. because they would never have sacked Rodgers in 100 years. They never had the balls for sacking Rodgers. They didn't want to provoke that kind of argument with the fans. And so Rodgers would still be in situ right now. They didn't take any kind of decision. Rodgers walked on his own. And if he hadn't done that and took it out of their hands, he would still be here. And we may not be in the cup final. But this was not a triumph on their part. They did nothing. Eric, where were you?
Well, I'd make a couple of points on Dermot Desmond. Whatever opinion we might have of Dermot Desmond, he's a very calculating individual. And he plays very much on the emotions of Celtic supporters.
Yeah.
So he knew by appointing Martin O'Neill as interim, and I say interim manager, we all have PTSD when it comes to the word interim anyway, that's for sure, when we consider what happened in 2019. When he appointed Martin O'Neill, he knew the nostalgia of that would play on the heartstrings of fans. And he knew that if we won the Falkirk game and we won the game against the Ibrox side yesterday, that that would immediately win over a large proportion of the fan base because of the whole nostalgic element of having O'Neill as the man who did that. So he's 100% playing on the heartstrings of the fan base through the nostalgic element of that. And don't get me wrong, I was nostalgic seeing Martin O'Neill on the sideline in his tracksuit. Everybody was. You can't help but be. And you can't help but be happy for him having got that result yesterday. I mean, you'd have to have a heart of stone if you weren't. But one of the things you've got to sort of look at is O'Neill is generally a fairly good communicator. And the way he communicated in the post-match interview with Premier Sports, and he basically said, I feel I've just turned 73, but I feel like I'm 94 after that game. And he was dropping subtle hints that he, while he's enjoying what he's doing, it's not something he wants for the long term. No. And I think, I honestly think that O'Neill is smart enough to know that at 73 years of age that he can do this for a short while, but he's not going to do it on a permanent basis. So going back to what Joe was saying and leaning towards the whole Maloney thing, I think Joe's right in saying that Maloney doesn't have the charismatic effect that a Celtic or ability that a Celtic manager should have. So that leaves you the question. Martin O'Neill, I believe, doesn't want it. Sean Maloney, I don't think, could do it. So I think Dermot Desmond always likes to get his way, but I don't think that Dermot Desmond is going to expect when he goes to Martin O'Neill, if it gets to the stage where he says to Martin O'Neill, will you stay to the end of the season? Martin O'Neill could turn around to him and say, no, I don't want to do it. I don't need this. O'Neill is probably going to weigh up a lot of things. He's going to weigh up that he doesn't need that level of stress in his life. His life has been very easy for the last 6-7 years. He'll take the cup final. I think he'll take the cup final because, look, I mean, Stephen Robinson's side aren't going to be a pushover. They're going to be tough to play against in that final. You know, so it's not going to be an easy final by any stretch of the imagination. But
no,
this is the thing.
The final was yesterday. I'm for a big shot if they believe that.
Yeah, and this is the thing with Desmond. Desmond thinks that he can say jump and people will say, oh, hi. I think he might be a little bit surprised when it comes to Martin O'Neill in that regard. And there's another thing that I was thinking as well, and this is the other point I want to make on Dermot Desmond, right? Like, there's rumours going around of a reshuffle in the boardroom, and the fact that Susan Whelan was at the game on Wednesday night means that she could be coming in as CEO and so on and so forth. It's all rumours, it's all conjecture at the moment. But the one thing that I would say is that if he did a clear out of the boardroom and he put a new CEO in and a new chairman and a new financial controller and so on and so forth, it would make no difference. They're different people doing the same person's bidding. And that's the problem at Celtic. And I think we all learned in the last week that no matter who is inside in that boardroom, they will be doing Dermot Desmond's bidding. So if he does a root and branch clear out of that boardroom, they're still going to do the same thing. They're still going to perform the same function for him because it's crystal clear now that Dermot Desmond controls everything at Glasgow Celtic. And that never became more apparent than in the last week. So I'm past thinking that the board are the problem. The board aren't the problem because the board are just yes men and nodding dogs for Dermot Desmond. And it doesn't matter who is in that board. And I said, the reality is Dermot Desmond has an iron grip on the club right now and he has no intention of letting it go. And many people have said it, and I'm going to say it. The only way that Dermot Desmond is going to leave Glasgow Celtic is in a box when his time comes. And that's it comes to us all, but he will be around till the day he dies. And that's the reality. And as long as he is, there's a bleak future ahead when it comes to the actual prospects of Celtic reaching its potential. Because this man, and this man alone, is holding Celtic back. And that, for me, is crystal clear since the last week passed by.
Eric, I'm jumping in here. I still think Dermot Desmond is barely interested in Celtic. He gets involved in the very big decisions, but I don't think he's involved in sponsorship deals, whether we're going to play in the Lowland League next season, who's going out on loan, who's coming in as a new academy coach, how much Barrafield's costing. I think he's interested. So if we were to change the chairman, change the CEO, I think there'd be some new ideas coming in. There would only be an improvement. I acknowledge Dermot Desmond will still be at the top of the tree, pulling the strings, and he'll make the big decisions, the management. But you used the phrase, he's got an iron grip. His iron grip is on the golf course. I don't think he's got an iron grip on Celtic. He's definitely there for the big decisions. He always has been, whether it was Gordon Strachan coming in as manager. When Ange Postecoglou's agent wanted to get him into the Celtic job, he didn't bother going to Chairman Bankier, outgoing CEO Lowell, incoming CEO Mackay. He went to Dermot Desmond, and once you get an audience with Dermot Desmond, once you get a phone call with him, you've got a foot halfway in the door. So Dermot Desmond surprised a lot of people last week with his statement, but I really might be off my nut, but I don't think he's that interested or bothered in what's going on day to day, week by week at Celtic.
As long as you go back,
as long as there's
Champions League. Can I ask you a question, mate? Yep. Can I ask you a question? You said that he surprised a lot of people last week. How many of those people do you think work inside Celtic Park?
No idea. Absolutely no idea. It's surprised.
At senior executive level. Do you think he ran that by every one of them first?
Not a chance. No, that went straight from him and straight onto the Celtic website. Ian Jameson never got a look at it. Peter Lowell never got a look at it. Michael Nicholson never got a look at it. I'd like to know the reaction of the folk at work on the website when that came in with a barked order. Get this published as soon as possible, 15 minutes after Rodgers' resignation. So, he has his way, but I don't see him being involved in.
So let me ask a supplementary question then, right?
Eric
has been invisible for the last 7 days, like absolutely invisible. He's attended games, not right.
4 years. 4 years.
He's not made a statement. He's not said a word. He's not done anything of any note. If you're Michael Nicholson, and major decisions like that only even run by you. You're just completely ignored by by a minority shareholder. And you, on top of that, are now getting grief for Celtic fans every time you take your seat in the ground. You can go and earn a living somewhere else. You can go and do something else. If you've no authority, if you've been undermined by the people above you, and you're eating the shit for them, would you hang around? I wouldn't hang around. I don't think you would either. What's keeping him in a job? And it's not just the money. It's not the money. He can go and earn that somewhere else. He was a senior partner at Harper McLeod. He was earning a mid-six-figure sum doing that.
No.
He can go away and he can get similar earnings doing something else.
No chance.
We're not paying that guy. We're not paying that guy a mega, mega, mega CEO salary. And I agree with you. He's not a mega CEO. He's not on the level where he's going to go and earn millions, right? But between his salary and his bonuses and whatever, he's not going to be in the poorhouse, let's face it, right? And I just wonder if he's eating all the shit that he's eating now and basically having no authority and no say and being completely undermined, he can't just be there for the money. We could do better than Michael Nicholson for the money. So I don't see how it's in his interest or in ours to continue the charade that he's actually influencing in. that he's actually earning that money. He's not earning it. He's not doing anything.
James, he was a leading sports lawyer. There is no call, there's no demand whatsoever for sports lawyers in Scotland. If he went back to Civvy Street, he'd be lucky to get a quarter of his salary, or maybe a push, a third of his salary.
And trust him, that was a difficult question.
Yeah. He would need to earn that. He'd need to do some graft. He'd need to do some work. What do you think he does at Celtic? Keyhole. He sits
let me ask you then, right? If Dermot Desmond, right, effectively thinks he's paying this guy's salary, he's not earning it, is he? So what I'm thinking now, well, where am I thinking is, if the stories are true, that we're going to see some boardroom changes, he'll definitely be one of them. He'll fall on the sword, or he will be pushed onto the sword, right? Because right now, he is not worth his 850 grand. And it must be bad for morale, even if you're happy collecting the wages, even if you're getting the big paycheck. It cannot be easy knowing that everybody in the building thinks you're a joke and that the fans are laughing at you and that you can't go anywhere in Europe without people being like, Celtic's invisible chief executive. Look, there he is. That's the man. The guy's getting no authority at his own club, so why should we listen to a word that he says? There are easier ways to earn a living. There are ways to earn a living that don't make you feel sick every time you look in the mirror. So that was a wee digression.
Yeah. But going back to what I was saying about Dermot Desmond, like Joe says that he doesn't feel that he cares. But when you look at the collective meeting back in September with Michael Nicholson and Chris McKay, I mean, all that bullshit they gave us about having to send him an email to get his approval on transfers and all this kind of stuff. And that's where I think he has the influence, Joe. He's stifling the transfers and our ability to spend big in transfers and bring in the players that we want to. It's clear from what they're saying that all decisions on transfers have to go through Dermot Desmond. And let's look at it from the perspective that one of the biggest Achilles heels we've had this season is the lack of transfer activity that happened during the transfer window in the summer, which had to have been influenced by Dermot Desmond, going back to what the collective were told in September because of how the process is done. Emailing Dermot Desmond to get approval. Anything over 3 million, he has to approve it. So he does influence. He might not have huge interest in the day-to-day running of the club, and that's what he leaves the board to do. But when it comes to the money-making decisions, he seems to have major influence over the money-making decisions. And let's be honest about it, it's the money-making decisions that are holding Celtic back. Because he blatantly lied in that statement last week when he stated that every penny was reinvested in the team. It's clearly not. It's blatantly obvious it's not. And the Michael Nicholson and Chris McKay, obviously, I mean, they're not going to go into a meeting with the fans and say that, you know, that Dermot Desmond has to approve transfers. They're not going to bullshit on that because Dermot Desmond would fucking lose the plot with them if they did. So they've clearly told the truth in that regard. And that is, it's the money. He has influence over the money-making decisions at the club. And that's what's holding the club back. The fact that we have a huge surplus amount sitting inside in the bank account, it's not being spent, it's being kept there for no apparent reason. It's not like we've got lovely new graphics outside the stadium. That's massive. I suppose they think that's the stadium renovated now. And that's that job done. And they've got Martin O'Neill in, and everybody's in cloud nine because Martin O'Neill's back and the nostalgia element is through the roof and it's all fucking feel good now. But again, it's just surface, paper over the cracks. And we'll move along as long as the cracks are sufficiently papered over. But that's not going to wash anymore. That's why the Celtic Fans Collective is together, and that's why the Not a Penny campaign is going, and all of that kind of stuff is just not going to wash anymore. But it goes back to what I said about if he does do a root and branch clear out of the boardroom, those people are still going to have to go through him for the money-making decisions. And unless he changes his attitude in that regard, we're just going to be seeing more of the same.
My God, it's turned into a glass half empty night on here tonight. How damn. I was going to talk about Rodgers, and I was going to ask you guys, based on what we've watched in the last two games, why this guy couldn't save himself and does an awful lot of grief by simply changing the style just a wee bit, just enough to unshackle the players. The idea as to why he didn't get Osmond and players like that to go, I've kind of banged my head against the wall on that one for weeks and weeks now. And again, I'll be writing about it again tomorrow. Rodgers' style of play would not have suited those guys, right? But it was up to Rodgers to come up with a style of play that did. And O'Neill and Maloney junked Rodgers' slow, steady build-up approach almost the second they encountered the first-team squad. And that's why we've won the last two games. And that's why we've created a lot of chances, and that's why guys like Osman can get in the team and score goals and do well. And there's somebody just asked about Trusty. Every decision that Rodgers has made in recent years, I think that that's the one that he will have the most trouble with himself. Because his explanation for that was fairly ridiculous. This idea that you want to have one right-footed defender and one left-footed defender. Jesus. There's like a handful of people in football that think that makes any difference at all. And he's one of them. And it's fetishizing just for the sake of it. I'll put it as bluntly as I could have. Austin Trusty would have saved his job. Had Austin Trusty played at Tynecastle, we'd have got a result at Tynecastle. Whether we'd have won the game or no, would have depended on our finishing being a wee bit better. But the third goal takes a heart out of the team. And for that point on, we're getting nothing out of that game. But there wouldn't have been an own goal, there wouldn't have been a penalty, and I'm fairly sure that we would have got 3 points. And when he looks back on it, I think that's the single decision he would regret most, because it made no sense then. It makes absolutely no sense now when you see how well that boy's played in the last two games, especially yesterday where he was colossally fucking brilliant. He looked like a £6 million central defender yesterday. Looked like a guy you would pay that kind of money for. And watching him and Carter Vickers together in the team, if that day ever comes, will be a good one for every single one of us. The question is to whether Rodgers sabotaged himself. I'm writing about this tomorrow. Or sabotaged the team. I don't think he sabotaged the team. He definitely sabotaged himself. I don't think there's any question about that. And I don't know why he didn't just make that one little tiny stylistic tweak that would have made everything a bit better for the last few months. I think he got too wedded to his own ideas, as a lot of managers do. And instead, he tried to find a fit for the players that he had. He tried to fit the players into the system that he favours. And as I said in a piece yesterday, it's like watching somebody spend months trying to stick square pegs in round holes and then blaming the pegs. It was absolutely mad. Joe, what do you think? Is there an explanation for what Rodgers did? For what Rodgers did or for what Rodgers didn't do? I definitely don't think it was deliberately sabotaging the team. You say, get it up, you to the board. Professional managers do not do that. No matter what some people think, it does not happen. I just think that Rodgers got too caught up in his own tactical ideas and just was resistant to changing them. But I don't know. What do you think?
Rodgers is single-minded and guilty of digging a hole for himself. He's got his ways. There was a horrible atmosphere. There was a cloud over the whole club. Everyone knows that Rodgers was leaving at the end of the season. There's players at the club that wanted to leave in the summer. There's players probably that we haven't heard of. It hasn't gone public yet that wanted to leave, and they will be leaving. On the Trusty front, there was one match that Trusty wasn't picked for. Trusty was injured in pre-season or very early in the season. It was Scales and Carter Vickers that started the season. For all his critics, Scales has been pretty good this season. The game at Tynecastle, Trusty hadn't kicked a ball in possibly 2 months. So when I'm no great fan of Dane Murray. Dane Murray should be where Stephen Welsh is. Dane Murray should be out at Motherwell getting a full season of SPFL Premiership football. He got 20 games at Queen's Park last season, brought back to Celtic and totally overlooked. He played one Scottish Cup tie against Raith Rovers, another Championship team, and had a poor 10 minutes at Aston Villa away in the Champions League. So Trusty not even played any football. Murray had played a couple of games this season. Murray was right-footed, so there was a case for playing Murray at Tynecastle. There was no case for playing Murray and Donovan together. I'll give you that one.
No, there was no.
He should have given up on trying to find a right winger. The only right winger that we've got is James Forrest, and you can bring him in for 20 minutes or half an hour, or half an hour plus extra times you got yesterday, and he'll have an impact. But if you don't have a right winger, Yang was back in the bench yesterday. No idea why. Yang will start a game, then disappear. He started at Dundee, was taken off at half-time, he was in the squad, but never got on again. Sturm Graz. He wasn't in the squad for Hearts, wasn't in the squad for Falkirk. So that's another of those mysteries. So Rodgers is single-minded. He is far from perfect. When I was asking about the useless Mark Lowell at last year's AGM, Rodgers came up with some absolute nonsense about how involved Mark Lowell was in bringing Ange Postecoglou to Celtic and how involved he was in the first two transfers. So I've got no great affection for Brendan Rodgers. He's a very good manager. He's a better manager than our CEO is. He's a better manager than our chairman is. He'll get a decent job in England or Spain. Nicholson or Lowell wouldn't get a job anywhere else worthwhile in football, and their pride wouldn't allow them to take a lesser job and lesser money. So Rodgers is in a strange place. He allowed things to get on top of him. He was inflexible tactically, and the whole thing was closing in on him. And there was a similar period in his first season back when Celtic lost to away at Kilmarnock, beat Feyenoord at home, and then lost to Hearts. The place was hellish at that point, and it continued being hellish. There was a draw at Aberdeen, at the end of January. There was late goals thanks to Adam Ida for winners against Motherwell and Hibs, and then there was a horrific home game against Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock equalised late on, and then the season turned with Joe Hart announcing his retirement. Suddenly, with Joe Hart retiring, it dawned on a lot of people, we don't want Joe Hart to go out as a loser. Things turned round, and that turned the season round. Things were galvanised, and things came good. So there's strange things involved. Rodgers has got many, many, many faults. The best thing that could have happened, well, it was stupid saying 150% I'll be here next season, 200% I'll be here next season. That left him as a hostage. He didn't need to go that far, and it'd been better all in if he'd resigned during the close season and given the club a chance to bring someone else in, because he thought he could see it through. He thought he could see the season out. He was keeping to those silly promises made, and
he was held hostage by his own words a wee bit.
Yep, absolutely. He went too far. He was a bit full of himself, and he knew the media was speculating on his future, so he doubled down, and it's rebounded on him. But Celtic's a better place now without him, but I've no idea what direction the club... But I have a good idea. The club's going in a downward direction. They'll have a compliant manager in that agrees with club policy. It won't be a manager that's managed in the EPL. It won't be a manager that's taken a team to fifth place in the EPL in successive seasons. It won't be a manager that's previously been involved in the Champions League. So Rodgers is now history. He's left a hell of a legacy. A benchmark, one of Martin O'Neill's favourite words, has been left. We'll see what comes next, and we'll wish for the best, but there's nothing really to be confident about going forward, that we're going to find a progressive manager, a progressive director of football, and everything's going to change. More likely it'll be more of the same, and knowing the Celtic way, they'll take the lazy way.
Eric, what were you? Well, did he sabotage himself or did he sabotage the team?
That's what I'm thinking. What was the best way to term this? And in his opening press conference, he said he would never leave, or he would not leave unless he was emptied. And I think ultimately he emptied himself in the end. And that was, he emptied himself to the point that he decided to resign. And he was a hostage to his own.
Yeah.
He was wedded too much to his tactics. He was too stubborn to change his tactics, and he brought about his own downfall in that regard. And we talked about it for long enough, time and time again, about the tactical inflexibility, the way that he just wouldn't change. It was always like-for-like substitutions. He stuck rigidly to the 4-3-3. He wouldn't allow the players to be adventurous or be more forward-minded, attacking-minded. And ultimately, I think he just fell victim to his own stubbornness in the end. And it's sad because, you know, it was sad to see his demise come about the way that it did. And you could see that he was running out of ideas. But at the same time, he couldn't come up with any new ideas. And that was what killed him. You know, that was what really, and I mean, that was clearly evident at Hearts last week, you know, last Sunday, when the changes he made when we were 3-1 down were just like for like substitutions, and he didn't tweak anything, he didn't change players and players' positions, he didn't move anybody around in any way, he just stuck rigidly to that 4-3-3 formation, and we got what we deserved out of that game. And ultimately he decided he was resigning after that because he obviously felt himself he couldn't take things any further, and we'll never know for sure what was going on in what was going on in the background. You know the old saying, there's no smoke without fire and all that kind of stuff, you know. Is there, or will there be some element of truth in what Dermot Desmond said but blew it out of complete proportion? I don't believe there is. I think that was blown out of all proportion. I don't think there's any truth in it. And some of it was so blatant, it was ridiculous. But I still feel that we need to see Brendan Rodgers' side of things, or we need to hear Brendan Rodgers' side of things. And I am sure we eventually will. Yeah, I'm sure we eventually will, because he can't, you know, obviously he's staying quiet at the moment. He isn't going after Celtic in a legal way or in any legal capacity, and he certainly probably wouldn't have wanted to have done that before the game against the Ibrox side, because he didn't want to upset.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he wouldn't want to upset the momentum that the club. I mean, he's still a Celtic man at the end of the day, and he would want to see. I'm sure he was just shouting for Celtic just the same as anybody else yesterday.
I wonder if international break is going to produce something unexpected from us.
I think in a lot of ways the international break could be quite interesting in the things that happen. I mean, it will tell us whether or not the club is serious about getting a new manager. If nothing happens in those 2 weeks, then we know they're not. If nothing happens in those 2 weeks, we know for sure they're not interested in getting a new manager in, and that they are going to try, as Joe said, right on the whole Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney thing and just take the easy way out. But yeah.
You know something? I have a confession on that front. As much as I think it's completely unworthy of us to shoehorn those two in there and have them see you at the season, and that brings me a lot of attendant risks. Not least of which, by the way, is that they might be successful and the board just might give them 3-year contracts. There is one upside to it. There's one tremendous possible upside to it, even accounting for the fact that they might succeed. And that's that it increases your chances of seeing some kind of structural change on the Celtic board. Joe's right about much of what he said. But on Desmond in particular, if you get maybe two different people in the two top jobs, you might see some new ideas and you might see some new thinking. And the truth is, I don't want these people picking the next Celtic manager. If it was up to me, Rodgers would have seen this season out. And there have been changes before the season ended that would have put that responsibility in the hands of people who will take it seriously. And if these guys decide to go with Maloney and O'Neill to the end of the season, then in some ways that might be a positive, because it greatly decreases the chances that enough of them will be left on the board to pick the next manager. And that would suit me fine right now, because the last thing I want is these people coming up with something during the international break that we're all like, oh, fucking hell. This is what we're stuck with for the next 3 fucking years. You know what I mean? I know we talked last week about the nightmare scenario of a Robbie Keane type appointment. But, I mean, that's a year zero appointment, but there are really genuinely dreadful possibilities out there other than him. I was pretty glad to see that the England youth manager, what's his name, Lee Carsley, has ruled himself out of it, thank God.
Oh, God.
If he was ever gave an interview in the first place, that would be deeply concerning. Mark Van Bommel's agent's bumping his gums today. I very much doubt that we ever own talks with Mark Van Bommel. I think that's his agent just taking a flyer and try to drum up some interest for elsewhere that isn't in the Middle East, because apparently he has two pretty good offers from there. But I don't know. Right, I want to talk about one little element of yesterday. And I see where wee Petters won again tonight. Although, quite why he's haunting a Celtic fan podcast when his own club continues to be in the shit and look in such an absolute mess, I do not know. But since he's here, maybe he can chip in. I thought that their songbook yesterday was the most disgusting that I've heard in many, many, many years. And the famine song even made a reappearance. And I said in my article today that I think that was for the man on the touchline. And I wanted to make sure that I covered the fact that both Lennon and Rogers are also both Irish. But Lennon and Rogers are Lennon and Rogers. They were only following in the footsteps of the Blessed Martin, and he is the real hate figure over there. It's well known that Murray absolutely loathed and detested him. Because I think if Fergus built the modern foundation of Celtic, then Martin certainly erected the first cathedral on it. And they hate him as much as any person alive. And I think that that's why we heard them at their absolute worst yesterday. They were absolutely fucking shockingly bad. And I cannot believe that a single person in the media hasn't even mentioned it. I'm not asking them to criticise it and hammer it and demand SFA action, but you could mention it. Instead, a few people were saying, credit to the Ibrox fans, they sang for the whole game. Yeah, it's what they sang for the whole game that should be troubling every single person in Scotland. Joe, we've been here before and before and before and before. What's it going to take?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's part of the fabric of Scottish football, and no one welcomes it more than the Celtic board. So it was great when there was only 800 away fans or zero away fans. Michael Nicholson's been working away to bring them back. So it was one of my intended questions at the AGM, but I think it's been overridden by other issues. So in 2006... Here we go. In 2006, UEFA banned the Billy Boys. Mm-hmm. On March 16th at Celtic Park, the Billy Boys was sung by a good majority of the 2,500 away supporters. How many banning orders were issued after that match or arrests made? So Celtic are very, very happy with it. It was great when there was victims.
That's a very valid question you ask me, and I think you should ask it.
I think there's a few others.
They're
due back at Celtic Park on the 3rd of January. Is Nicholson taking any action about it, or is he just going to be tapping his feet to the songs that we know that's going to come on the 3rd of January? Three of the next four SPFL Glasgow derbies are at Celtic Park, and the songs that you heard yesterday, they'll be at Celtic Park on the 3rd of January, again after the split and at the start of next season. So Celtic are very happy with it, very comfortable with it. They negotiated to bring them back. That's part of their beloved Old Firm package. So until our club stands up and does anything, you're not even whistling in the wind. It's not happening. It's part of the fabric, and no one enjoys it more than the money men at Celtic Park, unfortunately.
I agree with you. Your club should have called that out yesterday. Rather than the press being fully, Rangers are demanding an explanation from the SFA. It should have been Celtic demanding an explanation for the SFA. Steve, where in the hell are you going to get a grip of this? You know what I mean? We're sanctioning clubs for flares. We're sanctioning clubs for all manner of things. But when are we going to get real about this stuff? When are we going to get real about it? There isn't a single other ethnic group anywhere that would have to tolerate this as regularly as we have to tolerate it here in Scotland. And I just don't see any sign that anybody wants to get real about it. Eric, what about you? I mean,
well, it's interesting.
It must seem like an alien landscape out here sometimes when you look at it further.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a lot of the time it's very hard for me to wrap my head around it. I don't understand what their fixation is on having to sing this stuff all the time, but it's interesting that we talked about Susan Whelan and the possibility that she might be coming in as the CEO, but she's Irish, isn't she, Joe?
Yeah.
She is indeed. So if we got an Irish CEO in at the club, maybe, just maybe,
that's interesting.
You might get somebody who would stand up to it, because she would definitely be highly insulted by the things that are being, and I don't think she would condone.
When you mention that, I think a lot about how John Reid handled the famine song in the first place.
Yeah.
John Reid made sure it was in the European Parliament, the Westminster Parliament, the Scottish Parliament, and it was discussed by all of them.
So, if she does become our CEO, it'd be interesting to see what kind of reaction she has towards this. If she's going to be installed in the near future or what the story is, but if it's a case that she's in place by the next game in January, in early January, and they behave like that, I would be interested. That would be an opportunity for Susan Whelan to show what she's made of. It would be an opportunity for her to, if she is to be the CEO of our club, to totally ingratiate herself with the fans, to show that she's willing to fight for the fans and she's willing to fight for Celtic supporters and, you know, highlight this. Because, I mean, I have to admit, just like you, James, it's a long, long time since I heard their songbook in as great gusto as it was yesterday. And they didn't let up from start to finish. And that's what makes beating them all the sweeter then in a situation like that, because I would absolutely hate that we'd go through a game like that where they've pulled out a songbook like that and then they win. That's when it's really, really hard. It is, you know, are hard to swallow. But like Plunge makes a point there, the fixation is bigotry. It is. It's just the way every single one of those fans is brought up to hate. It's in their DNA. They don't know. I think a lot of them don't even know what it is they hate. You know, they don't understand. Yeah,
everyone.
But like I don't think they actually understand what it is they hate so much about me. I'm Irish. You know, it's what is it they hate about the Irish people? Because, you know, the Irish people are no threat to them or ever have been. You know what I mean? So I just don't get what they hate about us. You know, so like it's like they're this tiny little minority of people who, as we say, are in the west of Scotland, and they're just singing dogs abuse at anything that is Irish or green. And it's actually funny. It's often, you know, when I hear the John Brown story about the green jelly, where I piss myself laughing, you know, like how utterly narrow-minded and cretinous can you be, like, to say that I'm not eating green jelly because I don't like the color green. It's it's so sad. Like, it's actually sad. It's a mental illness is what it is. Like, if you're that fixated on it so much that you won't even eat green jelly. You know? I feel sorry for them. I don't actually, but I don't feel sorry for them. You can keep repeating yourself over and over again about these things, but it never changes. That's the thing. And nobody ever highlights it. And nobody ever brings it up, and nobody ever speaks about it. We speak about it. We'll continue to speak about it. All fan media will speak about it, but we are the only voice that highlights it.
You would think sometimes with the stony silence that accompanies this stuff that everybody in Scotland believed this shit, but just didn't have the guts to sing it at work.
Yeah, you would. But yeah, look, nothing's going to change unless somebody, you know, and like you said, John Reid, he highlighted it back in 2006, and he really did a good job back then. And I would hope that if we do bring Susan Whelan in, that she's a voice for a reason in something like this, you know, that she brings it up and she says that it can't, you know, it can't continue. Nothing's going to stop them. But, you know, they're never going to stop.
So why may we hang in the game yesterday before we wrap it up? At the end of the match, the Celtic fans were singing the manager's name, their manager's name, which I thought was hilarious. There's some good footage of Celtic fans banging on a couple of their bus windies, singing Danny, Danny Roll, while they all sat on the buses like that in mute, stony silence. The media's been talking about how good a start he's had. Now, I don't know about you guys. My maths might be not quite up to snuff, but I make it 4 games, 2 wins, 2 losses, and they got one of their wins courtesy of a last-minute penalty kick miss against Hibs. So are you guys seeing the big revolution over there, the great start, or what? Has this guy got one foot in the grave already? What about you, Joe?
we're into the usual new manager cycle. We've all seen it. We're quite familiar with it. It used to last a year, but Russell Martin, 123 days. Luckily for him, I think 2 months of that was through the summer. So I think it was 15 matches that Russell Martin lasted. 15 matches in, I don't know where Danny Rowe's going to be. If you have a look at the December schedule, they've got Dundee United away, Kilmarnock away, Ferencvaros away, Hearts away, and then the 3rd of January, Celtic away. So he might not be the saviour, the messiah, by the 4th of January. Hopefully he's had a good few doings and we add another one. An overdue league defeat on the 3rd of January. You know, he's a bang average manager. Just because he wears a suit, brogues and a poppy, so what?
And two Ibrox badges. Two club badges on his
not head. One, but two, yeah.
He's badly at his depth. He got an improved offer after Kevin Muscat turned the job down. His agent really should be getting him prepared for a job in the English Championship or Germany for next season. But hell mend him. It was great Celtic fans singing his name. I think when Celtic fans started singing the Giovanni Van Bronckhorst song, I think that almost done it for him. But it's too early yet.
From that moment on, you're right. Yep.
It's too early yet for Rowe to get the sack. But January could be tough for him. Keep up the good work, Danny. Russell Martin was unbeaten against Celtic. Russell Martin never lost a goal against Celtic. You've been in the job for 4 games and you've got a defeat and 3 goals in your CV. So roll on the German Russell Martin.
Gary, what were you? If you can top that, mate.
I don't know if I can top that. Roll on. Russell Martin, yeah, no, that's brilliant. Yeah, you're always having beauty tucked away there, Joe. I'll give you that. But, no, I think, look, what I immediately found amusing was the whole, donning the blazer and the tie and the brown brogues. And as you said, the two White Rocks badges on each lapel on the suit. It's hilarious. I mean, he's trying to, ingratiate himself to the Ibrox support, and they all think he gets it, but yeah, look, I very much echo Joe's sentiments. This is just a matter of time. It's the usual. It'll all go sour eventually. Don't know if it'll happen in the next few weeks. Don't know if it'll happen, if he'll last till the end of the season, but he won't last much beyond that. He's out of his depth. He's completely out of his depth. And the problem is that, as you said today, James, our season only started yesterday. So we're now going to start gathering serious momentum. By the time January comes around and they come to Celtic Park, I'd say we could give them a doing. And if that happens, if by January we give them a doing, he's already walking on thin ice and he's going to be in trouble. He will probably, I would reckon, at that stage, get to the game at Ibrox in March or April, whenever it falls. And if he doesn't win that one, then he's in serious bother. I think he's going to be defined on the games against us. And I suppose, look, you're going to have to see how he performs against Hearts as well. That's going to be an interesting tussle. If he drops and loses points against Hearts, that's going to land him in trouble as well, because, like it or not, Hearts are in this race, and they're not in this race at the moment. They're a good bit off. So if they want to make any inroads into this title race, they've got to get the better of Hearts as well. And I just don't see it at the moment. I don't see them being capable of beating Hearts.
Question.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think they're going to come into serious bother against Hearts as well. So yeah, it's inevitable. He's just going to be another of those people who walks into Ibrox, gets chewed up and spat out. That's it. And he's going to walk away with a nice bit of compensation. And I suppose that's why he entered into the role. He said, sure, what's the worst that could happen? I won't succeed and I'll walk away with a nice payday. And it's funny, if you were to calculate how much they've paid, in paying out managers' contracts, in the last 13 years, it'd be an interesting figure.
I'd imagine. Yeah, they could have bought themselves on our Portuguese striker that doesn't score goals.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So, yeah, as Duhano says there, he's a busted flush. I don't see him, but I can't top Joe's beauty there anyway. There's no topping that.
Right, so last question, and we'll keep it as brief as possible. Predictions for Thursday, predictions for the weekend, Joe.
Since Mittelland or Mittelland, whatever, that Danish team are top of the Europa League. They'll probably beat Celtic 1-0. They'll beat Celtic by a goal on Thursday. Kilmarnock, I'll be looking for Celtic to win that by 3 clear goals and go into the international boredom with a bit of a boost, a bit of breathing space. We've got to use. We should be using every minute just now. We should be using absolutely every minute of the international break. It'll be interesting how we resume after the international break, but I suspect we'll lose by a goal on Thursday and we'll win by 3 or more on Sunday.
Before I get to Eric, I'll tell you what I think of that. I think that we'll win both games and we'll keep the Martin momentum rolling. What about you, Eric?
I'd be confident enough that we can knock a draw out of Midtjylland. All right. I just think that with the kind of momentum that O'Neill has got with the club or with the team at the moment, I feel that we can go out there with a bit of confidence, and we're especially going to be buoyant after yesterday's result. I'm going to call a 1-1 draw on that one. I think we'll get a draw out of it. And I would be confident we'll get another decent 3-4-0 score against Kilmarnock, because Kilmarnock are, they're not in a great place at the moment. They're not any great shakes. I wouldn't feel threatened by them coming to Celtic Park in any way, shape or form. Now that Johnny Kenny has broken his sort of, I suppose up until Rodgers left, he couldn't buy a goal. And then all of a sudden, and it was like we had said all along, his positional play was really good. He was getting himself into the right positions. He just couldn't get the ball over the line. He seems to have broken that sort of hoodoo now. And I'd say you'll probably see the goals flowing for him. So I'd expect another couple from him on Saturday or Sunday. And I'd like to see Osmond on the score sheet again. But I think, you know, I think overall we should get a comfortable win there, 3-4-0. And that would send us into the international break on a high. And whether or not anything happens in the managerial front over those 2 weeks, we won't know until those 2 weeks are over. But yeah, so 1-1 draw at Midtjylland, and I think we'll get a 3-4-0 win over Kilmarnock.
Good stuff. Right, we're going to call it a halt tonight then, guys. Joe, you want to take us out with the usual?
I don't know. What's the usual?
You want to get us over the 2,000 anyway, Joe? Yeah.
You do your usual sales pitch for all the blogs and for... Like, subscribe, share.
We should do that earlier on, because we don't know how many people have gone through the whole 1 hour and 13 minutes. I suspect the ones that hung on for 1 hour and 13 minutes are already subscribers. If you're not a subscriber, we started tonight's show with 1,950 subscribers. So if 50 of you generous folk can if you can subscribe, that'd be great. That would get us over the 2,000 mark. I don't know what it really means, but it's quite a good number.
And just so everybody's aware, it's free. We're not looking for any money. We're just looking for you to subscribe and follow us. That's it. We're not trying to make any money.
And if you're already a subscriber,
don't afford his own holidays.
If you're a subscriber, please give us a thumbs up. If you've watched it live, please return to put a comment, particularly if it's a positive comment. If it's not a positive comment, you know what to do. But so we'll be back again. We'll be back again next Monday at 6:30, and Celtic will still be in the League Cup final regardless. So 1,950 and growing. Let's have it through 2,000 by the time we kick off next week. Thank you.
Thank you.